This is the Dive Into Malaysia Travel Podcast, episode 20 with Dive Into Malaysia founder Sharon Goulet. In today's episode, I'm discussing everything accommodation, from the types available in Malaysia to some amazing and unique options you may want to consider. Note that this isn't just about luxury accommodation, it's about all types. As well, I'm sure a top 5-star resort on its own private island has something everyone can enjoy and they can certainly be awesome. A hostel bed in a rainforest or a homestay in a longhouse can be something anyone can afford and leads to an absolutely amazing experience that is worth considering. The fantastic news is that, in general, Malaysia's accommodation is very affordable. It also has everything from dorm beds to brilliant 5-star hotels for a fraction of what you may pay for them elsewhere. You can also stay in the middle of a rainforest, on a private island, in an overwater villa, with your own private pool, and a lot more. There are some amazing experiences out there. In today's podcast, I run you through all the different accommodation options you have in Malaysia, as well as some of the amazing choices you may want to consider. By the end of this episode, you'll know what you need to do to pick the right accommodation for your amazing trip to Malaysia.
Welcome to the Dive Into Malaysia Travel Podcast, the place to be when you're dreaming and planning all the awesome adventures you could have in Malaysia. Each week on the show, your host Sharon will take you from underwater adventures in one of Malaysia's marine parks to standing on top of the world in Merdeka 118 in KL to eating the best food you'll experience in your life at a hawker centre to planning how to get from A to B and where to stay. It's all here.
Before I get started, I do want to apologise if you're listening to this podcast after episode 19. Where I promised that this episode would be all about food and eating in Malaysia. Unfortunately, I couldn't get the interview that I am going to do in time for this episode, but I promise we will come back to this topic soon. It is maybe my favorite topic in the world after all. Nothing is better than Malaysian food. But let's dive into everything accommodation. First of all, I want to point out that this episode is about the types of accommodation, and I'm going to run you through some unique and awesome options. It's not so much about booking accommodation, which was covered in episode 12. So if you want to know the nitty-gritty of booking accommodation, you can listen to that episode at diveintomalaysia.com/episode12. I also link to that and everything else I talk about, including more information on the accommodation that I talk about and everything else in this episode show notes, which you can find at diveintomalaysia.com/episode20. So let's dive into types of accommodation in Malaysia. Basically, there are all types. You can have the international standard, luxurious 5-star hotels. Some of the big name brands are in Malaysia, particularly in Kuala Lumpur. In fact, these types of hotels generally are only in those bigger places or very touristy places like Langkawi, Penang, Kuala Lumpur, Kota Kinabalu, and Kuching. Outside of those places, they do exist in some areas of Malaysia, but a lot of places won't have those types of options. Now, they can be brilliant and very good value compared to what these hotels can cost in other countries. In Kuala Lumpur in particular, you can find 5-star hotels around the 300 ringgit mark in great locations. One I stayed at recently was the Traders Hotel by Shangri-La. It's right in the heart of Kuala Lumpur by the big KLCC Park with great views of the Petronas Twin Towers. My views from my room were just amazing, and it's definitely worth paying a little bit more to guarantee yourself a room on that side of the hotel. It was so amazing when I arrived. I went out and ate lots of food. I came back, it was dark, and I was like, wow. I walked into my room, the nighttime view got even better. That hotel also has a great rooftop pool and bar, perfect for sunsets. And even if you don't stay there, it's a good place to go have a sunset cocktail and watch how the city looks as the sun goes down and the Petronas Towers. I do want to say at this point, though, to not rely on star ratings too much. A 4-star hotel, in particular in Malaysia, can be a very different standard to what I would expect from a 4-star hotel here in Australia, for example. A lot of 2 to 4-star hotels, I would say, are the standard Malaysian-style mid-range hotel. Now, these hotels can and usually are really good value. You'll probably pay about 90 to 200 ringgit a night for these hotels and get a great deal. Some cost more than that, but that's when I consider them overpriced unless the location or views are superb. If there's a special reason why they cost more, then that makes sense. Otherwise, it can feel a bit overpriced. In most places in Malaysia, these will be the top option of a hotel. You won't have that international 5-star. So what do you get? What exactly am I even meaning with this Malaysian-style mid-range hotel? They're generally older style and you'll feel like you've gone back in time a little bit, but they always feel very solid. The U-rooms are usually a decent size. In fact, I can be surprised how decently sized they can be even in heavily populated areas. And you'll get the standard things, either a queen, king, or two single beds, although some do have triple or quad rooms. You'll get a desk area, a flat screen TV, air conditioning. Air conditioning is very common, so don't worry about that too much. Tea and coffee making facilities. Many have a safe, some toiletries, private bathroom with either a shower or a bath or a shower over the top of the bath. Those types of hotels may have a pool. It'll most probably have a restaurant with a breakfast buffet that may or may not be included. It's my kids' favourite thing in Malaysia, sadly, is the breakfast buffets. Well, after the theme parks, they love a good breakfast buffets. And generally in Malaysia, you'll find the breakfast buffets have a good mix of local and international or Western style breakfast. So we'll get the food that we generally have here in Australia, like cereal and toast, and there'll be someone making omelets. There's all of that sort of standard stuff, as well as local options. This can be a really great chance to give them a try. So definitely don't be scared to try some of the local breakfast too, at least in a buffet. If you don't like it, you can go get something else. A lot of these hotels often have a gym as well. Now, the more you pay, generally the higher star rating and the more facilities you'll get. So it doesn't necessarily mean the room is better, just that then you're more likely to have the pool or whatever. Many of these hotels have room service too, a 24-hour front desk, and they'll usually speak great English at reception. They're usually comfortable, clean, and they can be great. My biggest complaint of this style is that while I don't usually hear noise from within the hotel, usually any noise from the street comes straight in. I'm a light sleeper and I can find that super annoying if any event is outdoors. In April just gone, I traveled during Ramadan and there always seemed to be events in the evening outside and it would float into my room and keep me awake and I got a little frustrated. Now, the upside is things don't tend to go that late in Malaysia, but since I'm usually operating in the Australian time zone and go to bed early, it can be frustrating. But to be fair, for most of you, if you're not going to bed at like 8, it probably wouldn't be much of a big deal. I don't remember anything ever going after midnight and most things would be done by like 10. So if you're out enjoying those events, it obviously wouldn't be an issue for you. Of course, you could also use earplugs. And of course, too, the call to prayer can come floating in mega early as well. Otherwise, the only problem with this type of hotel, if you can call it that, is usually the room is a little scruffy and older style. It's not really that much of an issue generally. Since the pandemic, some places haven't kept up with maintenance as good as what they would have otherwise, but it does seem to be a minority of hotels, thankfully, and you can quickly tell that by just reading reviews, including the reviews on diveintomalaysia.com. We keep them updated. We check what people who've just stayed in the hotel are saying to get an idea if that is the case. For mid-range travelers and even budget travelers, these hotels can be the ones to pick and are probably your best bet. For people wanting to save money, there are tons of budget hotels all over and hostels in main tourist areas. For the super budget hotels, expect small rooms. They can be quite tiny and the rooms may not have a window. So if you want a window, which is better, I think, make sure you book a room that has a window if you're staying at a place that does not have all the rooms with windows. Just look out for that. It's usually labeled quite clearly when you're booking. In most places, even the budget places will come with air conditioning. And if you didn't have a window, you would really need that. But yeah, it's not usually that much of a problem. Dorm beds are really just in the more touristy backpacker areas, and they don't necessarily save you much money off a cheap private room. Homestays can also be popular in Malaysia, and it can mean different things. The types of places on Airbnb are homestays, so they can be your own house or apartment, or it could be a room in someone else's house. Okay, like when I hear homestay, I assume I'm staying with someone, but that's not necessarily the case. Often it's just you get your own home. Private apartments and houses can be a great way to go for families or people staying a while. Generally, I don't think it's necessary otherwise, though, as I think it's a shame to self-cater in Malaysia. I don't think you really need a kitchen. There's such amazing and affordable food to eat. Even when we lived in Malaysia for a year, we had a kitchen that we never used. The most it got used was putting milk on cereal for breakfast, but otherwise we were out eating. It wasn't cheaper for us to self-cater over eating out. Homestays in someone's home can be a great way to see a more remote area or to have different experiences though. And I stayed in one recently in a longhouse in the Kelabit Highlands region in Sarawak, which I did talk a little about in the last episode. Now it was really amazing and such a unique experience. So I'm really glad I did that. All-inclusive hotels are not that common. Some hotels will have packages that may include some tours and meals. If you are looking at hotels on the East Coast Island, or Mutiara Taman-Negara in the national park does this type of thing as well. I've also stayed at Club Med Sheraton, which was absolutely fantastic. That's all inclusive, all the kids' activities and stuff too. It was great until my husband and my then baby got incredibly bad food poisoning. Like the only time it's ever happened in Malaysia, and it happened at a five-star resort. So yeah, I just stick to street food now. But generally, it's really not much of a thing, not all inclusive like people in Europe or in America can mean, where you get your drinks, your food and all that sort of stuff. Like I said, it can be like they're more package deals at places, at some resorts, but then it'll be really clear what you get. It's not like you just get everything. If you're heading places that are a little more remote, like Tiaman Island and Taman-Negara, buying those sort of package deals can be a great way to make it easier and save money, because if you're going to be stuck at the resort anyway, at least you don't have to worry about getting stung for meals. You've already paid for it. Now, let's talk about some more unique options. One place I mention a lot because I've stayed there a lot of times and love is Alexis Hibiscus in Port Dickson. You can actually go straight here from Kuala Lumpur International Airport and stay in an overwater pool villa with your own private pool. So just let that sink in for a moment. You're actually like sitting in one of those overwater villas you've probably seen photos of from various places in the world, and you actually have your own pool on the like back porch of that villa. So your pool is over the water. You can watch the sea while you're swimming in the comfort of your pool. And it's really quite awesome. And it's quite affordable for people from countries like Australia as well. There's also glorious overwater villas in places like Langkawi or around Semporna in Sabah. And I think there's just something so luxurious about staying in an overwater pool villa. Even if you don't have the pool, it's pretty luxurious. One of my favorite resorts in Malaysia also has these, which is the Pangkor Layout Resort. Now, this is off the west coast of Malaysia on its own private island next to Pangkor Island, which is a bit south of Penang. Now, this is one of the nicest places I have stayed in anywhere, and it has a super glorious beach, great pools, restaurants, and lots more. The only downside is that it is pricey. I mean, the room itself is not so bad, but when you get on the island, wow, the restaurants and stuff, they really sting you. So I found that a little frustrating, but it was super beautiful and I am totally going to go back again, especially because I went by myself. I feel like I need to take my husband. It was kind of romantic as well, and I'm just sitting there by myself. But anyway, it was still a great place. Now, Langkawi is really full of luxury places, which can be a little remote and surrounded by nature too. And really, most of the better accommodation in Langkawi tends to be in those types of spots. So if you want somewhere like really beautiful, where the hotel is really beautiful, Langkawi is definitely somewhere to look at. For cheaper, amazing places surrounded by nature, Sarawak on Borneo has some amazing national parks. And some of these have their own accommodation in the park run by the park headquarters. And these can be quite affordable and you'll be surrounded by nature and wildlife. Now, you usually have to get in contact with the park headquarters for the park in question to book it. So that's the downside. It's not as easy as going to Agoda and just plugging it in, but it is worth it and it can be really great. In fact, I just stayed at Mulu National Park in a garden bungalow and that wasn't basic at all. Most of the national parks there, to be fair, you're going to be in pretty basic accommodation if you do this. But I found my garden bungalow quite luxurious really at Mulu National Park, and I think it was only 260 ringgit a night or 270, something like that. So not even that much, and I'm in my own little bungalow surrounded by all that beautiful nature in a remote spot. But they also did have hostel beds and rooms priced in the middle where you could enjoy a lot of that as well. So definitely in Sarawak, you can consider staying in a national park. And next time I go to Barco National Park, which is just outside Kuching in Sarawak, I definitely want to stay in their accommodation so I can soak up more of the park. For a more luxury and amazing wildlife and nature experience, these options exist as well. I had such a great stay at Taban Wildlife Resort in Taban Reserve earlier this year. That's in the state of Sabah on Borneo, and wow, it was just ran so well and there was just so much opportunity to get in nature, see the wildlife, you were looked after, you got all your meals. I really can't rave enough about how beautiful it was and how much it's worth going there if you can. Or for a more basic and cheaper option, Turtle Island off the coast of Sabah was fantastic as well. That was a bit more like staying in one of the national parks in Sarawak, where you have the more basic accommodation, but you're also in an island. There's not many people there. You get to enjoy it during the day. And then there's some amazing turtle experiences at night. So that's another one worth writing down. Now, I mentioned homestays in longhouses before in Sarawak, and I'm definitely more of an upper mid-range to upper-end traveller these days, especially when I'm travelling fast to get content for all of you. So I admittedly did struggle a bit as I didn't like sharing a bathroom and would make sure I got a room with a fan next time. But I mean, nothing beat the authenticity of the experience. I'm in a longhouse, there's people cooking over a fire, but smoke goes into your room when you're trying to sleep and then it feels less great. But the experience was so good that I would totally do it again and feel a little bit uncomfortable because it was just such an amazing experience. Now, for families, there are definitely many great options. Most things I've already mentioned are great for families. My kids love the Lexus Hibiscus with the private pool villa. The places in nature work great for them too. Club Med couldn't have been more family friendly with their great kids club. But their absolute favourite is the Legoland Hotel. And honestly, it's one of mine as well. We just had so much fun there. This hotel is really just made for kids 12 and under. And like I said, everyone can enjoy it. I certainly did. There's so much to play with. Every time you hop in an elevator, disco music starts and we'd have a little dance. It'd be playing Everything is Awesome and you're like, everything is awesome. I really can't recommend that hotel enough if you go to Malaysia with kids. Really try and stay there to like make their life. Now, quite a few top hotels offer kids club in the main areas where you can find most foreigners, like Penang, Langkawi, and Kota Kinabalu. However, the quality of this can be a little lacking. I find they're mostly aimed at little kids, like under eights, but then they don't let kids go until they're four. So it's like this tiny little time frame where it kind of works for kids. I found it a bit disappointing because by the time my youngest kid was old enough to go, my oldest kids had outgrown it. So we never really got to put all the kids in it and go relax. But it is a great resource. And even though it mightn't have given me and my husband time off, my kids do enjoy it. They're quite social. They liked getting to meet other kids, do different activities. We made friends through them sometimes. The kids would make friends and then we'd go out for dinner. One time in Penang, they made friends with a kid at kids club and their parents were actually from Penang but living in KL, and they took us out to eat and all the stuff they ordered. It was just so good. It was amazing. So it can also be a great introduction to meeting other people. Now, Club Med was definitely a big exception, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were some hotels in Langkawi that do better at this. I just haven't tried them, the kids club in them. There are quite a few hotels around the place that are on top of shopping centres, which can make things very easy, especially for families. It's one of our great loves is staying in a hotel above a shopping centre because it's just so easy having all the eating and shopping options right downstairs. It was totally priceless when our kids were little. It was so easy to get them food or to go out quickly for dinner so they weren't too tired or back too late. And now it's even better. Like, my kids are getting a bit older. My 13-year-old just wants to go shopping. If we're staying just above, like we recently did in the Berjaya Times Square Hotel in Kuala Lumpur, she can just go down and go shopping by herself and then come back to the room when she's ready. It's just so easy. Or I just stayed last month in the waterfront in Kuching, which had this as well. It was so good in that hotel. I just hopped on an escalator from inside the hotel and it took me right to a giant food court area. So it was really easy when I wanted a quick eat or I just wanted great food because it was really great food and very cheap as well. So it was like eating at my hotel, but without the hotel prices and with better quality food. It was really handy. So to recap, today I've talked about the types of accommodation and gone through some of the different choices you have. I hope this has helped you think about what type of accommodation you would like to stay in when you're in Malaysia and introduced you to some unique choices. Remember, you can find today's show notes for this episode at diveintomalaysia.com/episode20. Make sure you subscribe to this channel because next episode I'm talking about everything Port Dickson. This is the closest beach area from KL and is close to Kuala Lumpur International Airport. It's a great option if you want a quick beach stop, want to stay in an overwater pool villa, like I talked about before, or simply want to relax after a long flight to Malaysia. That's kind of our favourite way to visit here. Let's just relax for a little bit, wash off the travel, and then we're all ready to go sightseeing other places. I'll give you an overview of what you want to do in the Port Dickson area and why you should visit this great place. I look forward to chatting with you then.
Thanks for listening to Dive Into Malaysia Travel. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast for more travel inspiration, planning advice, and fun about travelling in Malaysia. Don't forget to leave a review so we can continue to bring you the best content. See you next episode.